So we are learning Torah in the schus that Klal Yisrael should emerge victorious and finally, if there's ever such a thing as finally in Jewish history. Our history is that long that nothing is finally, that we should be able to crush our enemies.
Amen. Can you hear that song?
Amen. All right. It's not going to be an easy shiur. So, there are a lot of ideas. I'm going to try and get as much of it across as I can and do it as best I can, but I'm just not so sure about it. It's all based on a shiur of our salvation, and I think I'm trying to work it out all over again just so that I should know it better, and then there are ideas there that are very, very significant. But it's not the simple shiur. I would say that as we reach now the end of Sefer Bereishit, and this is something that we had pointed out years ago, Sefer Bereishit is the story of brothers. Better said, the relationship between brothers. Better said, the non or negative relationship between brothers. The first set of brothers are Cain and Hevel, and there, of course, the problem is resolved with a great deal of finality. Cain kills Hevel. Next set of brothers we have are Shem, Ham, and Yopet, the children of Noah. They're going to go their different ways. They're going to go in radically different ways. They're going to wage war with one another. There will be unique moments in history where Shem and Yafet converge. The age of the great philosophers and scientists of Greece, that was from Yafet, and there was a relationship with Klal Yisrael. But since then, as we learned once in the Kuzri, since the time of the great philosophers of Greece has meant nothing. Has meant nothing in history. Fascinating. The seat of most probably all the greatest knowledge concentrated in one place that this world knew. Aristotle, Socrates, all the rest. Greece hasn't produced anybody like that in the 2,500 or more years since the age of the great philosophers. The only ones, of course, who kept producing great people were Klal Yisrael, Greece. Nothing, it became a backwater country. The next set of brothers are Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak and Yishmael are right now at each other's throats, locked in a terrible, terrible struggle, and we have absolutely no way of knowing when that struggle will ever end. It will end most probably in Biat HaMashiach, with the coming of Mashiach, but there's absolutely, it's not on the radar screen, as they would say. That there should be any peace between Islam and the Jewish people. Islam is out at war now against the entire Western world. We're living in a time of an age of a crash of civilizations. Civilizations are simply locked in great struggle with one another. And it is a difficult time, and it will continue to be very difficult to see how anything is going to change. What's the next set of brothers? Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav. Those who know the famous Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, "Halacha b'yaduahu." To halacha, we know that Esav soneli Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. But you have to keep in mind, as you read the newspapers, if you have the stomach to read the newspapers, how how many friends we have around the world. How many friends we have. And how many of those that we thought were great friends are coming out with all sorts of accusations. It's not only a world of a double standard. Not only a world of a double standard. I was just reading last night I was reading one of Bernard Lewis's books. Bernard Lewis is the great scholar of Islam in our generation. Dave Lewis, and he's 92 years old. Ganz und sicher over there. So he says that he has a whole chapter on the double standard. He lists all sorts of places where Muslims slaughtered Muslims in the tens of thousands in our time. Not a word was raised in the, not a word was said in the whole world. He describes in detail, I didn't know all the details, he describes in detail how Assad, the Qadr, Yirach Shemai, there was opposition to him in this northern city in Syria called Hama. There were no negotiations. He leveled the city, killed men, women, and children. Between 25,000 to 30,000 people were slaughtered in a matter of a week. Nothing. The world. A few months later, Christian phalanges go in to Sabra and Shatila and slaughter face Palestinians that we were not guilty of. The world has not forgiven us for that. And of course, excessive force is being used. What are you talking about? What are we doing? We're targeting civilians. It's unbelievable. You have to watch our good friends who are here. How many times have our recent prime ministers run off to Turkey? Turkey. Yeah. That's our relationship with the Muslim world. Amazing. Stunning. But we're talking about Aesop now. The Aesop world, just watch. Even the little items in the news are important, just to know who our friends are. So that struggle continues until today. The next set of brothers, of course, are the 12 brothers, the children of Yaakov. And the story of Seif and the Reshit is a family that is shaken by the terrible tragedy of the sale of Yosef. Is a family that, by the end of the Sefer, it would seem that they have become reconciled with one another. By the way, by the end of the Sefer, I mean, it takes Marsh to the last few psukim in Vayechi, after Yaakov has passed away and is buried in the Maris HaMachpelah. They come back home, and it's years after the sale of Joseph, after he has revealed himself. And they say, Avichot Sivol of Neimoso, your father commanded before his death that you shouldn't harm us. There's, you know what that means? It means that there is unease, there is fear. That's not a healthy relationship in a family. And then Yosef again, in the last few psukim of Sefer Bereishis, he tells him, no, it was all part of God's plan. I don't worry, I'm going to... It means that, I don't know why this time I have the feeling that it ends. Yes, there's a reconciliation, but Abbas, it's going to take a little longer than the end of Sefer Bereishis. It may take throughout all history until ultimately we will become Goy Echod Boretz. As the Zohar says, in Eretz Israel, we will ultimately become Goy Echod. That's, of course, what's supposed to be taking place right now. You'd never guess that that's what's supposed to be taking place right now. We seem to be more torn apart now, but I think that's the great challenge. I have nothing to say as how we're going to go about doing it. I'm afraid that that's going to be a job for Mashiach. But division between the brothers is not all a bad thing. Yaakov is going to bless his children, and he's really going to describe each one of them in a completely different way. Yehuda is Gurayeh, the lion. Shimon the Levi, he describes their anger and their strength. Reuven is hasty. Yosef is Bechor Shoro Hadolov, the beauty of the ox and the strength. Binyamin is a wolf that tears its prey apart. Don is that Shimshon is a snake on the path. Naphtali is Ayola Shlucha. And Ayola, what's that? That's a deer? Yeah. Where do you see Naphtali Ayola Shlucha? What? The Doa. That, you know, that deer or whatever it is. Post office, okay. Yisachar is the Chamor Gohen. We're talking about people. They're all different. They're all different. They all have different talents and different abilities. And they're 12 individuals. Each one is unique in character, temperament, talent, personality, opinions, strengths. And each one represents a unique kind of life force. And what emerges from the brachas that Yaakov gives to his children is, God never wanted us to be clones. He didn't want all of us even to serve him in precisely the same way. There is halacha, which outlines how we are supposed to serve him, but there's place in Klal Yisrael for chassidim and misnagdim and litaim and even within the chassidic community, all of the various groups in the litaim community. I mean, we got so many. But by the way, that and we'll see in a moment what Rav Kook has to say about that. That we're not supposed to be clones. Imagine an orchestra with only one instrument. Very boring. A painting with only one color. The beauty of the painting is the whole galaxy of colors. The power of a symphony is all of the various sounds coming together to create that great piece of music. Klal Yisrael is supposed to be the same way. I'll point out on the sheet down number 3. This is Rav Kook. Hevdelei hamin hagim v'halachot hein lechora echad hagormim lepirur v'lachaluka chevratik beYisrael. The various communities, the Eidot as they call them here. It's more than communities. We're talking about Sfardin and Snagdin and in Sfardin, real Sfardin, we're talking about Merakins and Taimanim and Iraqis, and all of them have their own minhagim. You go from one shul to the next in Har Nof, you think you've moved into who knows what kind of a different world. This one talks like this, and this one talks like this. This one says that one says that. I had the experience, I spent a little time someplace where the only minion that I have, there are a few minyan, but they're all Sephardi. All Sephardi, and at first, I thought that I'm a Greek in the tabernacles. How did I get there? I'm Yuvan and Sick, and where did I get lost over here? And then I got a hold of myself and I let go. These are Jews that have been davening like this for the last 2,000 or more years. And I'm getting into it. You don't hear me screaming yet, but yes, they have been hugging. They have been hugging. One did not go through life and thinking, only the way I do it. That's the only good way. And everything else is no good, because that's destructive of the Jewish people. So Rav Kook goes on to say, with regard to the difference in custom between various communities, it would seem that that contributes to the divisions. How are we supposed to relate to this menorah of all sorts of different menorah? We're supposed to be the same religion, but they're different. See, this is a letter that was written by Rav Kook. Al tipol ruchacha. Let not your spirit fall. Mimash kol eitan tzlichal hachazik b'minhager u'mesorotea. From the fact that every community has to hold on to her customs and her tradition. V'liv choyene. And your heart is going to wonder. Eicho toshu ve'leinu ha'achut ha'le'umit. How are we ever going to see a return of national unity? Everybody's going off in all sorts of different directions. So Rav Kook says, let not your spirit fall. Shtei tshuvot ladavar. There are two answers. Ha'achat, one answer is, kol zman shehaechad mechaved et mesoret chavero, as long as one respects the tradition of his fellow Jew, the different minhagim, and they in no way do they cause any harm to brotherhood. If you can respect the other and his minhagim, that's wonderful. Vashniya, and the second is yesh b'chilufei hagavanim mishum osher nuach. The various hues and colors that make up the Jewish people represent a wealth of the spirit. Osher ruach, hamikaveitz b'tzura harmonit b'klalut olma. They all come together in a beautiful harmony of the Jewish people. Yachad im zot, together with this, yesh li'ot behemdelei haminhagin. You have to see the difference between the various customs, v'hamisorot and the traditions. Matzav zmani, it's a temporary situation. Ad yigamer hatzivyon ha'le'umi b'melo'o, until the complete, full stature of this nation will be completed. And then what will happen then is hamasoret atzmah machincha otanu hamid b'makom hamikdash beit din gadol klali l'chol ha'alma. When we finally reach that point, then first of all, we will all be joining together in the Bet HaMikdash. We will have a Sanhedrin on Har HaBayit that will regulate what goes on in Klal Yisrael, and will create the harmony between all of the menorah. And I mean, sometimes you come up with this at one time, like, you know, I bought into it. Oh, this is Minhag Yerushalayim. You know, such and such as many of you find. So when it made things easier, I loved it. You understand? Now, do give me many of you. But then there are other things that it's many of you. It's not really. My father didn't do that. His Seder didn't do it. So Shlomo Zalman, our father, the Tzadik Baruch Hu, said that in Yerushalayim there is no many of you. Jews have come from all over the world. So what are you supposed to do? At the gates of Yerushalayim, you throw out the tradition of 2,000 years, you come into Yerushalayim. Ani yelet tov Yerushalmi, I'm a good Jerusalem boy. No. The beauty of Klal Yisrael is, yes, all the various menhagim, mizalna, canon, we should only be able to live side by side in peace. But where do they come from? Well, somebody's fixing something outside. Where does it come from? So we understand, according to tradition, that each of the 12 tribes had their own minhagim, they had their own masorah, they had their own nusach ha'tefillah, and that created the tapestry that is the Jewish people. Where does it all come from? Where do the differences come from? And so the Vav begins by analyzing. Rachel and Leah. Everything starts with Rachel and Leah. Because by right, Yaakov should have been just like Yitzchak and another part. Each one has one. Yaakov has 12. The 12 are because of the mothers, Rachel and Leah. This is in general, there's something very difficult to understand. It says, the Hashgacha, God had designated one wife for Avraham, from whom will come the next generation. One wife for Yitzchak, for Yaakov too, and really the two brought in another two, a total of four. Why was it so? Obviously, it's so that we should have this place for all of these differences. But what's difficult to understand is, why did Leah have to go through what she went through in order to marry Yaakov? He did not like her, and that is an understatement. And she, together with her father, are going to, they're going to trick Yaakov at the most important moment in a person's life. He's getting married. And she's part of it. She's not innocent over here. I mean, somebody may say, you know, her father forced her. No. It doesn't seem that her father forced her. Why did it have to be that way? Why did this have to be the cause to the way that she marries him? Why did it have to be that Yaakov doesn't like her? Why did it have to be that Ayah Hashem God saw Kisnua Leah, that Leah is hated? So the Medrash says, and the Medrash really, it's a long Medrash, but the Medrash is summed up in one Rashi. And it's a Rashi that people don't understand. So, I don't know, we're going backwards, we're going from number 3, we're going to number 2. In Parshat Vayishlach, it's a Rashi that it's a mitzvah just to understand the Rashi. Vateitze Dina bat Leah, asher yovo liYaakov. Dina, the daughter of Leah who had been born to Yaakov, she went out, lirot, bibenot haaretz, to see the daughters of the land. And we know exactly what happened. Hamor, the son of Shechem, raped her, and then began the whole terrible story of Shechem until Shimon and Levi massacred the city of Shechem. And of course, they used excessive force. Shimon and Levi used excessive force, and civilians were hurt during the course of this onslaught by Shimon and Levi. What Rashi says, Dina bat Leah, the pasuk describes her as the daughter of Leah. V'lo bat Yaakov, isn't she the daughter of Yaakov? Why does the pasuk specifically point out bat Leah? Ella al shem yitzi ata. She is called the daughter of Leah because her going out. Nikrei bat Leah, that's why she's called the daughter of Leah. Sha'afhi Yatzah Anit Haita. She was also one who would go out. Now, if that doesn't sound good, you're absolutely right, it doesn't sound good. A woman who is a Yatzah Anit, who goes out, well, the Medrash is more specific. It leaves the impression of a loose woman like Leah, and the Medrash says, Ki'ima. It says, when Reuven brought the Dudaim, the mandrakes, to his mother, so Rachel said she'd like to have them. And Leah, very forward, she says, you can have them. You can have the flowers, but Yaakov has to sleep with me tonight. He has to come to my tent. That's forward. And not only that, she goes out toward the end of the day to wait for him to come home to make sure that he's going to come to her tent. Now, what maybe is more fascinating than all is, that night she becomes pregnant and she gives birth to Yisachar, who's going to be the great Talmud Chacham of the of the tribes. Something here doesn't seem to jive. Here is this woman who acts honest. So here I just want to read one sentence of the law. Lo ha-medrish v'lo ha-shi eina mitkavnim chas v'sholom lomar. Neither Rashi nor the Medrash had any intention of saying she'hayta l'leah imenu mida miguna shel zona o yatzonet. They don't at all mean that. Anybody who learns the Rashi that way has absolutely no clue of how Chazal express themselves. It doesn't mean to say that she was a harlot or a woman of loose morals. There's something they want to tell us about Leah. And this gives us an insight into the personality of Leah. Leah was fearless. Leah had great strength. She was a dynamic woman. She wasn't going to give in to anything. It says that Einei Leah Hakos, the eyes of Leah
She cried.
Why did she cry? Because everybody was saying, the world was saying, there are two sons to Yitzchak and Rivka, Esau and Yaakov. There are two daughters to Laban, the older to the older, and the younger to the younger. She was destined for Esau. And that's what was understood by everybody. That's what was going to be. And this Leah said, no, 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 no. And she fought everybody on it. And therefore she was ready to do anything as long as what will be accomplished is that she will marry Yaakov and she will not marry Esau. She's ready to fight for what she wants. Oh, is she ready to fight? Targum says, the word Leah has a meaning. The word Leah means exhausted. Leot.
Leot.
Exhausted. She struggled and she fought with all of her might. She's not going to marry Esau. We get it. And therefore she's going to go out there and wait for Yaakov to come. Leah is a dynamic and a powerful woman. Rachel is precisely the opposite. You know what? Rachel is the silent one. But Rachel is a shepherd. The Navi talks about the silent sheep that is taken off to be shorn. Here is this shepherd. Shepherd's hand, nice, warm, comfortable wool, and then one day they take the shepsala and they shear it off, and the poor shepsala is cold. But the shepsala doesn't fight back. Rachel makes the greatest sacrifice one can imagine, and in silence. She's going to give up the greatest moment of her life. And she has no idea that someday in the future she will be married to Yaakov. She helps her sister. She doesn't want her sister to be embarrassed. She gives the simonim that were made up between Yaakov and Rachel and her, she gives it over to her sister. She is the one who is the quiet, the passive, weak maybe, except two moments in her life. The outburst, and that outburst was really not an intellectual outburst. Hoveli boni v'yamayin meisomachi, give me children, otherwise I'm going to be dead. That was an outburst of a woman in great pain. And then, of course, when Klal Yisrael are on their way out into exile, she comes above her kever and she pleads before God for her children, give me my children, and may Allah li nachem, she refuses to be consoled. These are two different personalities. One is aggressive and dynamic, the other is quiet, laid back. One is a fighter, the other is not a fighter at all. Rachel makes sacrifices. What awesome sacrifices. Mom compromises. She's mevater. How do you say vitur in English? Vitur. She lets things be.
She gives away, gives in.
Surrenders. She surrenders. Leah doesn't know the meaning of the word surrender. When we have these two types, then we can assume that there are going to be children who are going to take after these mothers. It's going to be in the genes someplace. It's going to be in the genes, and it's going to be transmitted to the next generation. In terms of Kabbalah, Rachel is Chesed. One of the emanations, one of the Svidot, Rachel's Chesed, kindness. She gives up. She surrenders the most valuable thing, the most valuable moments of her life. She surrenders. And of course, remember, she's going to have to surrender something else never occurred to her. She's not going to be buried with Yaakov in the Moros HaMachpelah. The one who's going to get that is going to be Leah, not her. Rachel is Chesed. Leah, in Kabbalah, she is Gvura. Might, courage, heroism is a better word. These personality and character traits are going to reveal themselves, in their children, and that's going to set the stage for a great struggle. And that struggle is the one between Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda is the prime son of Leah. Rachel is the, her child is Yosef. Yosef is Rachel. And Yehuda is Leah. Now we have to understand what it means. So the thought over here, let me take you to the other side. Number four. The introduction of the Rambam to Pirkei Avos is called the Shmona Prakim LaHarambam, the eight chapters of the Rambam. You can guess, of course, why it's called Shmona Prakim LaHarambam, because there are eight chapters there. In chapter 6, the Rambam defines and describes, he paints a picture for us of two distinct and unique personalities. Yeah, we'll go through parts of it. Perek Shishi, 6th chapter. Ba'efresh Hashem ben Echosin Ha'mu'ula u'ben HaKoveshet Yitzro v'Hamushel b'Nashal. The difference between HaChosin Ha'mu'ula, the absolute pious one, and then that's one kind of personality. And the other is a personality that he calls Koveshet Yitzro, the one who is able to conquer his evil inclination, Umoshel, and rules over his will. When obviously it means, and this is what the Rambam is going to describe, there's a Chosid Hamu'ula who never desires evil.
Ooh.
Doesn't it? It's a Kushar Neshoma, a Heligan Neshoma that is pious through and through. Evil does not tempt the Chosid Hamu'ula. That's why it's called the absolute, the highest level of Chosid. The Moshe Berucho means somebody, yes, he feels temptation, and life for him is a struggle. And in that struggle, there may be moments at which one is going to slip and fall, but he picks himself up again, and he begins to rise upward. Amru ha-philosophy, just a few lines we'll do here. The philosopher said, Sha'am Moshel ben Ashav, the one who rules over himself, Even though he does good deeds, he does good deeds because he is able to overcome his evil inclination. Who also time he does them, v'humit aver elapulot harot. At the same time that he does good, he has a desire to do evil. Both at the same time. And he's drawn toward them. But he conquers his evil inclination. And he's able to do battle with his evil inclination. In all that he does, Almashi Ruwe Lov Kochotav, the Tavoto, Utunat Nasho, he is aroused and awakened according to his ability and his lust and his character traits. He likes evil. We are sad to what, but he does what's good. And he's pained by doing good. The nizok, and it causes him harm, but you know what? He's able to do it. How the chosid? Oh, the chosid, the pious one, who she nimshar v'pulato achar ma sheteileu tavato tchulato. He also, his deeds are also dictated by his desires and his lusts. But his desires and his lusts are for piety, not for evil. V'yasa hatovot, he does what's good, v'humit aveh v'nechsakaleh. And he desires, and he's drawn to it. Ubaskom and our philosophy, the philosophers decided, she'achosid yoteh chashuv yoteh shalem men ha'moshel b'nashel, that the pious one is far more important and far more complete a personality than the one who rules over his evil inclination. Right? Okay. Let's go to the next paragraph. V'shekasher v'karnu divei chachamim, the Rambam is going to disagree with the philosophers. He says, yeah, they have a point, but when we delve into the words of our wise men, nimzu lehem, v'im v'ayin shamit avel avedo v'nitzach aleim, hu yoter chashuv v'yoter shalem. Our rabbis disagree with the philosophers. The person who desires to do something that is usur and is drawn to it and is able to overcome his desires is considered more pious than the one who is an absolute, we'll use it again, Yele Tov Yerushalmi, you understand, good boy, never desires evil. More than the person who doesn't desire and has no pain by letting his type go. Arsha Amru, to the point that the rabbi said, Shekol Hashem Yiyeh Ha'adam Yoter Chashuv Yoter Shalem. The mother says, the greater a person is, the greater is his Yitzhar Hara. He brings the Gemara. Kol Agot Mechaveiro Yitzro God Limen. According to the Gemara, the greater the tzaddik, the greater is his yetzer hara. V'lo dayam zeh, that was not enough for the rabbis. Arsha amru, sheschar ha-moshe u'benafsho gadol v'irov tzaro b'mashto b'nosho. The reward for a person who is able to overcome his yetzer hara is far greater than the one who didn't have to struggle. As they said, lefum tzara agra, according to the extent of the pain in fulfilling mitzvahs and doing the right thing, the reward is greater. Our rabbis take a completely different position than the philosophers. And then here we come just a few lines now to a classic rabbi. Classic. Yotemi say even more than this. Shehem Sivuli Yot Adam mit Avel Aveyot. Listen to this. It's going to shiraya timbers. The rabbi said that a man should desire sin. For his Hiru Miloma, They warn people not to say, Shani b'tivi lo'et erveh l'zot ha'aveira. A person shouldn't say, I, by nature, have absolutely no desire for the aveira. V'afopi shelo osro ha'Torah, even though the Torah didn't prohibit it, v'hu'ono, listen to it, you'll see what he means. That Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Reb Shimon the son of Gamliel says, lo yomar olam hi efshi lech al boso b'chalam. A person should never say, I can't eat meat and milk. I couldn't walk around with a jacket of shatnez. I could not engage in illicit relationships. That's not what a person should say. You know what a person is supposed to say? He's supposed to say, Efshi, I can do all the avedas. But what should I do? My Father in heaven decreed that I shouldn't do it. Completely different approach than the philosophers. The Rambam is going to explain what the difference between the philosophers and Chachmei Yisrael are. Mm-hmm. You know what the philosophers are talking about? The philosophers are not talking about the avedas of wearing shatnez or eating basar b'challah. The philosophers are talking about a person who desires to rape, kill, mug, murder, steal. Those are the avedas they're talking about. And therefore, of course, the philosophers are absolutely right. Are you kidding me? Of course, the chosen ha'ula, and who's the chosen ha'ula? The one who doesn't rape. The one who doesn't steal. The one who doesn't kill. If he's not a murderer, kintim mafte yoyne yoyne. Not a murderer. They're talking about two different worlds. The philosophers and Chachmei Yisrael are in two different worlds. In our world, no. One is not supposed to say, oh, Chazer, you kidding me? I walk into a terrific restaurant, I smell it, I run out. What am I supposed to say? Supposed to say that there's a whole world that eats it. You know, so you have to be aware of this sometimes when they get, I was in Time Magazine place, they had an article about the seafood that Japanese eat, you know, they eat snakes, and the Chinese eat, I don't know, the Chinese eat Japanese. Everybody's eating all sorts of things. The response should not be, hey, I couldn't do that. The response is supposed to be that, you know, people eat it, these may very well be delicacies. And you know what, there are delicacies sometimes, you know, that is schmeck good, you understand, it's very good. But I can do it, I'm capable of eating it, but I will not do it. Because the commission goes out of line. That's the kind of Moshe Baruch Hu that the Rambam is talking about. The Rav will say that Yosef is the Chassid Hamu'ula, and Yehuda is the Kovesh et Yitzchak. He falls, yes, though ultimately Mashiach was born from his relationship with Tamar, but it wasn't that shame. Shlomo HaMelech and Mashiach are going to be born from David and Bathsheba, but it wasn't so shame. Yehuda is one who struggles. He struggles. He's a fighter. He's the daughter of Leah. There's a dynamism to him. There's a strength to Yehuda. Even though he failed miserably with regard to Mechirat Yosef, when he said, let's not kill him, let's sell him into slavery. That was a terrible failure of Yehuda. And it says immediately afterwards there in Parshas Vayeshev, Vayede Yehuda me'ezechav, and Yehuda went down, his brothers, horiduhu mi'gedulato, they brought him down from his greatness. It seemed that he had the personality, the character traits of being a born leader, but he made a mistake. Oh, but he realized. He learned from his mistake. Yehuda learned from his mistake. And when finally, in the next settling, when he came, it's a matter of going down to Mitzrayim for the second time, the one who emerges as the leader amongst the brothers is Yehuda. Yehuda takes responsibility. He takes responsibility, he takes charge. He's dynamic. That's Leah. That's Leah. A dynamism to the point of chutzpah. And at the beginning of Parsha Vayigash, when there's the struggle that's taking place between the two, it's a struggle between Yehuda and Yosef, who's going to be Melech. What Yosef dreamed of, what Yosef longed for, was to be Melech Yisrael. Because he had all that was necessary. He had all the character traits, all the personality. He was nearly the greatest of all the brothers. He had two dreams. One dream was about sheaves of grain in the field. And all of the grain of the brothers bowed down to his grain. That was a dream of economic power. But the second dream was where the sun and the moon and 11 stars bowed down to him. That's not a dream of economic power and strength. That's not money. There are no dollar signs in that dream. In that dream, we're talking about somebody who the greatest powers in the universe bow before him. Yosef sees himself as ultimately being the great leader of the Jewish people. And here the love goes off in a fascinating direction, and I would say that the direction of the Rav is one that the Ramban would approve of. Why doesn't Yosef reveal himself to his brothers? Why doesn't he reveal himself? So the Ramban says, as soon as he sees the brothers in front of him in Mitzrayim, he remembers the dreams. He remembers the dreams. They bow down to him. Oh, you know what just now happened when they bow down to him? They've come to buy grain in Mitzrayim and they bow down to him. Dream number one has been fulfilled. They are bowing down there, not to the great qualities of leadership or mind or piety of Yosef. They're bowing down to the economic power of Yosef. That's the first dream. The grain of the brothers bow down to the grain of Yosef. But that's not what Yosef wants. It's the second dream. The second dream is the one that moves him and keeps him going. He's not going to reveal himself because he still looks forward to the moment at which Yosef, he's going to maneuver it and manipulate it, that ultimately his father is going to come down. And if his father doesn't know who he is, his father will bow down to him too. And that will mean that his father is also finally bent before Yosef, and Yosef will be the leader of the Jewish people. That's, the Rav says, that's why he doesn't want to reveal himself. He's still holding out for that possibility. That's his great dream. That's his great dream. He feels that he has the character, the personality, the talent, the ability, the brilliance. And he does. But in a moment of weakness, Yosef was unable to control himself. You know what he did? He said, "I'm me, Yosef. I am Yosef." At that moment, Yosef knows that he is not going to be the leader of the Jewish people. His father will come to Mitzrayim, and his father is not going to bow down to Yosef. The second dream will not be fulfilled. And Malchus is going to go to Yehuda and not to Yosef. In a sense, you know what Yosef now becomes? Yosef now becomes exactly what Rachel was. You know what Rachel was? Rachel was the great enabler. She paved the way for Leah to become the wife of Yaakov. She made the great sacrifice. She set everything up. The chosen who was supposed to be her chosen is not going to be her chosen. She's even going to help her sister accomplish what her sister wants. There's a vitur. Yosef is going to take the back seat. Back seat throughout all history. Though, of course, the struggle will continue in all sorts of ways. There will be a Mashiach ben Yosef, and there's going to be a Mashiach ben David. The Gemara talks about two Mashiachim. There will be two. Of course, Yosef will retain a sense of leadership. But you know what Mashiach ben Yosef does? What does Mashiach ben Yosef do? He paves the way for Mashiach ben David. Just like Rachel paved the way for Leah, Yosef prepared a Klal Yisrael, saved the Klal Yisrael. Only that Yehuda is going to become the leader of the Jewish people. It's not going to be Yosef. Then when I started thinking about the idea of Mashiach and Yosef, it brought me back to something else that we talked about in the past that always bothers me. I raised the question, how is it possible that the brothers didn't recognize him? You remember that shit?
Yeah.
How is it possible? It keeps bothering me. So I have a nephew who wrote a sefer, and he tells me that there's an answer, and I didn't have a chance to look at it. But that I have a nephew, the only one who I saw, nearly, it sounds like his uncle's words. He lists 17 hints that Yosef gave his brothers that they should be able to recognize him. And they don't recognize him. So remember the shir there that he wanted. Yosef craved more than anything else. This is a different shaftim of Abraham. You'll see why I'm saying it now. Yosef craved more than anything else that they should recognize him and they should say, "You're Yosef." But it doesn't happen. Sorry, it was a great shir, but you were all left with one question. How in heaven's name don't they recognize their own brother? And the whole area is strewn with hints. But big hints, nearly putting the words into their mouths. He seats them at his dinner table, and there are place cards over there, Reuben, Shimon, maybe you, it's unbelievable. And they sit there, and the men are so, they're amazed. Look how baby! Who else in the world could know
their name?
Their birthdays. Their birthdays. I always promise myself one day that I'm going to learn the birthdays of all my grandchildren. Yosef remembers the birthdays of my grandchildren. My children. I have to be reminded. As I was studying, and this may be the subject of another shiur, there's a very powerful statement made by the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said the following, Vayaker Yosef is Echov, Vehem Logikiu. Yosef recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. He says that may happen at another moment in history. And we have to make sure then to recognize Yosef. And he says, who is that? Mashiach ben Yosef. And he says the following, I mean, it's shivers me. The Jewish people may find themselves living in a process of geula, and people don't see it. Who manages the process of geula? Who's the one that's moving the pawns on the board of Jewish history? Mashiach ben Yosef. And people can be blind. Sometimes, you know why it's difficult sometimes? And for some people it may be difficult. I remember, what a Mr. Guy debated on the pages of a certain magazine with a great man. Great man said, you think that now is a process of redemption? What are you talking about? Wars, terrorism, Jews being killed, this is a process of Gola. So I sent back a very brief letter. I said, yeah. The Gemara says, Milchoma Nami, war also is a chelta de Gola. That's part of the process of the beginning of redemption. And that's the only place in all of Shas, Tarli, and in Shami. I like to write that for a brilliant composite statement, the kind that I like to make. The only place where it says the words are Chalta Gula. Because the seventh bracha in Shemona Esrei, is the bracha of God Yisrael. And Mar says, why is it the seventh bracha? Because Gula is going to come in Shemitah year. So then the Gemara says, but wait a minute, we have another statement of our rabbis that in the Shemitah year there will be war. So are you telling me Gula is coming then? And the Gemara says, yes, Milchoma Nami, war also is a chauta de Gula, is the beginning of redemption. That's part of the process. The process isn't a rose garden. That's right. What's happening right now, how difficult it is. That's part of the process. And you know what you need? One needs strong nerves to be able to make their way through the process. And what does the Vilna Gaon say? The Vilna Gaon says, don't make the mistake again of Ayake Yosef Esechov Yaakov. Yosef recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. Gemara says, in fact, that Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be killed in battle. But then the Gaon and others say, we can save Mashiach ben Yosef. But you know what Mashiach ben Yosef is? He's the one who paves the way for Mashiach ben David. Yehuda is the dynamic one. Yehuda is the one who has inherited all of the qualities of his mother Leah. By the way, now you know why Yaakov had to have two wives. Mm-hmm. He needed to produce a Chosid Hamo'ula, the great pious one. Rashi, next week's segment, when they tell us that Yosef Hoyo and Mitzrayim, who Yosef? He was the Yosef, and they describe Yosef. He was always the same Yosef. Who Yosef in Mitzrayim? Who Yosef in jail? He's Yosef who's the second in command in Mitzrayim. Yosef was an even-keeled individual. Nothing changed him. He was solid in his piety. Yehuda, like David, tempestuous, stormy personality. Then the Rav says, the Jewish people can't have a king who hasn't struggled with himself. A king who has never struggled will never understand his people. Yehuda lives through that own personal struggle, and maybe every day. He is far, far in a better position to understand the neshama of the man in the street, the neshama of Klal Yisrael. So there have to be Leah and Rachel, from whom had to come a Yehuda and a Yosef, and ultimately only the first dream of Yosef is going to be fulfilled. He will be the great economic power, but he's not going to be the one who will be Melech. And that's really, let's go to the back, to the very beginning. I think I have the whole thing all upside down. Yehuda Achim Yuducha Achecha. His father tells him in this week, said that Yehuda, your brothers are going to acknowledge you. You're going to be king. Wait, hey, I'm late. Turn over on the other side, get back to the other side. Down at the bottom, where I wrote in. Rachel in Kabbalah is Chesed. Rachel becomes Yosef. And Chesed brings to Kedusha, sanctity. Leah is Gevurah, heroism. She begats Yehuda, and Yehuda is Malchus. Malchus requires Gevura. The combination in Kabbalah, the combination of Chesed and Gevura, they together create Tiferet, splendor. You know who splendor is? Yaakov Avinu is Tiferet. Avram was Chesed. Yitzchak was Gevura. That's what they are in Kabbalah. So what do Avram and Yitzchak ultimately bring a Yaakov who is Tiferet? The splendor of kindness and heroism. Same thing is true with Rachel and Leah. Chesed and Gevura. Yehuda and Yosef. Chesed and Gevura. And Yehuda is Kedusha. But what's the highest level? We say in Davening. Kedusha or Malchus. Royalty. That's Yehuda. Taylor, Taylor Gold, extricate me from here. I have to get to the next year.
Yeah,
we can get them all in. By the way,
he needed both. He had Rivka, who was tested, and his father.